Warning: the following podcast might be too truthful for most liberals. Listener discretion is therefore advised.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am your host, Mark Gillar. What a very special guest we have today, Miss Liz Wheeler. She is an American conservative political commentator. She's an author, a podcast host, and from 2015 to 2020, she hosted on the American News Network, the One America News Network, Tipping Point with Liz Wheeler. She's here today to talk to us about her brand new book, Hide Your Children, Exposing the Marxists Behind the Attack on American Kids. Liz, welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour.
Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We are so thrilled to have you here today. Before we dive into the book in earnest, I want to talk about you for just a second. I've seen plenty of things on the internet billing you as one of the most powerful conservative voices in America. They put you up there with Tucker Carlson, Ben Shapiro, Joe Rogan. And whenever I was looking at your bio to get ready for the show, you are 34 years old. How do you feel at this young age, and it seems young to me because I'm 60, how does it feel to have that much respect and to be considered one of the more powerful voices in conservative thought?
Well, listen, I think I'm just as flattered that you called me young. I'm still in the still young category.
Yeah.
Not the young category. But it's my privilege and my honor to be mentioned in a list of the list that you just mentioned. I mean, those people have done worlds for the conservative movement and for our country, which is exactly what I try to do on a daily basis. I host the Liz Wheeler Show podcast, where we try to set ourselves apart from other shows by really digging into the who's behind thing, mm-hmm. who's behind it, and what's causing this, what do we need to do differently, exposing the corruption, being unafraid to speak the truth, even when it's uncomfortable or unpopular. That's what I do in my new book, Hide Your Children, a very intense topic, although I think you'll agree the cover is pretty cool. Kind of warns you of the intensity, but also a fun cover with that wolf on it. I've always said, listen, I'm an ambitious person, but my ambitions are ideological. And what I mean by that is I don't have a specific job or organization in mind that I'm trying to work my whole career to get to. I just want to be able to talk to as many people as possible, because deep inside of us all, we all recognize objective truth, and that is what is under assault right now in our nation.
You've got that right. Up is down is up, pink is blue. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And the book, I thought, and I mentioned this to you offline, the book to me is so important because it corrects a long-standing belief on the part of many people, especially when you look at what's going on with the kids, the drag queens in the kindergarten classrooms, you know, the how-to books on pedophilia that are showing up in school libraries and classroom libraries. When you look at all that, you just think, boy, those liberals, you know, they've always been perverts. They've always been promiscuous. You know, they've always been in favor of things like recreational drugs and, you know, having polyamorous relationships and you name it. If it's a perversion, the liberals are into it. But they're really, and maybe some of the ones at the bottom doing these things are just perverts. But for the most part, our children are under attack. The nuclear family is under attack. And this is all being orchestrated behind the scenes. The master puppeteers are Marxists, according to what you said in the book. Talk to me.
It is. And this was not a preconceived conclusion of mine when I set out to write this book. The book started as a question that I had as a parent after COVID, when so many parents were looking over their kids' shoulders on Zoom school and seeing just this awful stuff, critical race theory and trans ideology, the 1619 Project being poured into their children's minds. It seems to me that obviously the attack on children through the public school system isn't new, but it did seem to be escalating. And I wondered, what's behind this? Who's behind this? What's their goal? Why now? That was kind of the underpinning of the book itself. So I started looking into it and recognized that, no, it's not new, this attack. It is escalating. But the reason that we're in this cultural madness that we're in is because Republicans haven't fought back effectively, as the left has spent decades upon decades infiltrating these various institutions and capturing them. So the education system is an obvious one. The media is another obvious one. Sadly, the left has captured a lot of religious institutions in our country. They've captured the law and they're working towards the destruction of the nuclear family. So what I do in the first half of my book is I name the names of the people and the organizations that are behind the capture of each one of these institutions, behind the attack on America's kids. And you will see, as I found, that the organizations and the people behind these attacks are Marxists. They are either self-avowed Marxists, their actions are in perfect alignment with Marxist ideology, or their heroes are your laundry list of the most famous Marxists in the world. It's really quite shocking. The second half of the book, Mark, is where I say, okay, now that I've thoroughly depressed you with what we're up against in the first half of the book, I want to offer you a solution, because I am not alone in feeling frustrated that the Republican Party, which we're supposed to trust as this bulwark against the leftist attacks on our institution, our country, and our children, and our liberty, has failed. And I say this purely objectively. We wouldn't be living in the cultural madness that we're in if the Republican Party had fought back against these attacks from the left effectively. Well, we're living in this cultural madness, which means something the Republican Party is doing isn't working. So what I do in my book is I offer a solution that's different than what the Republican Party is offering on how we can actually start winning, take back these institutions, and protect our kids.
When you look, I'm sorry, I had my mic off, embarrassing.
Oh, I thought I lost you for a second.
No, it's my fault. I was saying that when you look at what's going on in this country, one of the most surprising things is what's going on with Disney. This is a company that has, you know, been entrusted with our children for decades. And then we start taking a closer look at them, and according to your book, they're admitting that they're trying to implement a queer agenda with their various assets, their movies, everything. And I was talking to someone the other day, and I pointed out to them that when my son was little, I remember watching a movie called The Little Mermaid. I'm sure you've heard of it. And
yes.
I had someone at work at that time point out to me that, how can I put this? I want to put this, it's delicate, but during a wedding scene, the preacher in that movie was becoming aroused. And I said, you've got to be out of your mind. There's no way Disney would put something like that out. So the first thing I do when I get home is like, honey, where's the Little Mermaid tape, you know? And I popped it in and I went, oh my gosh, she was right. That really is happening. You can see it. It's obvious when you look for it. And then I was told many years later that Ursula, one of the characters in The Little Mermaid, was based on the drag queen Divine. Now, this is something that came out in the 90s. Okay, this wasn't last week in Florida to tick off the governor. This was when my son, who's now 32, was a little boy. So Disney has been slipping this queer agenda, if you will, into their movies for decades. And this whole time, like a bunch of sheep, we've just thought they were the greatest company in the world and we're doing great things for kids' entertainment. I mean, and they're betraying our trust.
Yeah, I actually remember the report that you're talking about. I maybe from 15 years ago. I mean, it was from a while back that listed all the different subliminal messages and symbols that were in Disney movies that are inappropriate for children, to say the least. And yes, I mean, it is a good example of how slowly the left has encroached on institutions that we trust. We used to trust Disney movies. Oh, they're child-friendly movies. They're just fairy tales. They're princesses. This is great. But yes, they for a long time have been compromised. I think what accelerated Disney's compromise is a lot of the decision makers at Disney, or in this case, I guess it was some of the artists that were inserting those things into the Disney movies. They were left leaning as individuals, right? They believed in a leftist ideology. They wanted that in some of their films. It didn't become the predominant thing from Disney until ESG. Now, most people are familiar with ESG at this point, environmental, social, and government metrics. It's essentially a social credit score system, like the Chinese communist social credit score system, except for businesses. And it ranks businesses, or it grades businesses, based on whether they are propagating leftist causes. Like, do you pay for your employees to go to other states for abortion? Have you hired a certain number of queer people? Have you donated to climate change, et cetera, et cetera? And when companies feel obligated to pursue ESG scores, which they do, because it's not just public humiliation if they have a low ESG score. They can be discriminated. They can face discrimination or face exclusion from the market because it's the big banking institutions that use ESG scores to determine where they're going to put capital. So when companies became beholden to these ESG scores, it required them, if they wanted to remain in the marketplace or they wanted access to capital, to push these agendas. And these agendas, of course, became more and more prominent and more extreme. And even Disney, I mean, I think that there was a box office analyst that estimated that Disney has lost almost $900 million on their last 8 studio releases based on the fact that they're woke movies. I mean, this is obviously not something that they're doing for the money. When I say for the money, for the profit, but they are doing it for the money when it comes to remaining in the marketplace. So we're not going to see the eradication of this kind of targeting of our children from woke corporations just based on consumer backlash. And I say that with all due respect to, I'm taking part in the Bud Light boycott. I'm taking part in the Target boycott. Yes, consumers have a voice, but ultimately we're not going to eradicate corporate wokeism unless we eradicate ESG.
Well, I will say this, having access to capital is one thing, but if you don't have any customers, you don't really need the capital. I mean, it's like sooner or later, Bud Light, I mean, I just can't believe what they did. It was the ultimate. I have a marketing degree, and I can tell you that from a marketing standpoint, that was a classic textbook example of someone not knowing their audience or possibly knowing and just not caring. But, you know, Bud Light has really dug themselves into a financial hole. And I think you also mentioned that the Disney Channel had lost, what, 2 million subscribers or something like that? It's crazy what these people are willing to do in the name of wokeism. And again, you know, if I'm the head of Disney and I'm talking to these big capital providers, you know, BlackRock or whichever one, I think I would say, you know, if I keep following your advice, we're not going to be in business and you're going to lose us as a customer. I mean, they just don't, I just don't know why corporations are willing to do this. It just seems like it's suicide.
I think there's an element of self-destruction to it too, because when you think about the ESG scores, which they have to pursue, mm-hmm. if you think about these ESG scores, the people that are propagating the ESG scores are actually anti-capitalist. That's the root of all of Marxism. So we talk about Marxism as it relates to cultural Marxism. The culture, that's what is relevant today in our country, but cultural Marxism is not, does not have a different goal than economic Marxism. Cultural Marxism is just a strategy the left knows they have to use in order to achieve economic Marxism. They know that they can't just send out a Marxist politician and say, hey, vote for me. I want to change the United States from a free country to a capitalist country. Like maybe you'd get a couple Bernie bros that vote for you, maybe AOC's constituents, but most Americans would reject that. So what they do instead is they understand that in order to be able to sell a country or sell a population on economic Marxism, they first have to destroy the cultural institutions. So all of this being said, the people that are propagating the ESG scores are at their heart anti-capitalist. They hate big corporations because these big corporations make money. They're adding value to the market. So there's a self-destructive element to what Disney's doing or what, but I don't know if Bud Lights was intentionally self-destructive. Disney is probably a better example of it. But Disney is a good example of it being self-destructive. I don't think that they just don't care that they lost market value or lost money. I think that they actively pursue the destruction of a free market staple.
Whenever Gillette decided that they were no longer going to be in favor of toxic masculinity, I think their market cap went down by $6 billion. And the CEO came out and said, well, you know, I think it was worth it. I think it was worth it. So it's amazing. There are people within these corporations who really don't feel beholden to their stockholders or to really anyone. They're just abusing their positions to, I guess, put forward these Marxist goals. With regard to the nuclear family, do you see what's happening with Disney and what's happening with drag queens in the schools and drag time story hour? All of that, at least among the people at the top, is a very, very conscious effort to destroy the nuclear family. It's not so much that they want drag queens in kindergarten classes just because that's what they want per se. They want them there because ultimately it destroys the nuclear family.
That's correct. It's not a matter of, oh, we need to expose children to alternative lifestyles so that these children grow up to be tolerant and inclusive, et cetera, et cetera. That might be what the left claims, but it's no coincidence. As I write in my book, it's no coincidence that critical race theory emerged in our education systems and culturally And very shortly thereafter, on its heels, the transgender ideology emerged. They might seem unrelated, but from a strategic standpoint, to the Marxists, and they are Marxists, by the way, critical race theory is the grandchild of critical theory, a neo-Marxist ideology written by Max Horkheimer at the Frankfurt Institute, which was originally named the Institute for Marxism. Similarly, the transgender ideology is just queer theory, which is a neo-Marxist ideology. The reason that these two ideologies emerge with such vengeance, one on top of the other, is because of what happens when children are taught, if you're white, you're racist, if you're black, you're oppressed. This creates an incredible identity crisis in young children. White children who are being told that they're racist just based on the color of their skin, not based on their character, their thoughts, their actions, how they treat other people. They're told that they're bad. They're told that they're evil and that there's nothing they can do to redeem themselves. So this identity crisis begins to fester. They start to feel self-loathing. They might even start to feel animosity towards their parents because their parents made them, quote unquote, bad because they made them white. And as this continues to fester in children, in swoops queer theory, in swoops the transgender ideology, telling children, no, you can't redeem yourself from your bad, your inherently evil, racist, white identity, but you can throw off that identity if you choose to put on a marginalized identity of, say, a transgender person or a non-binary identity, any LGBTQIA identity. And so young children are finally given this opportunity after they've been feeling this self-loathing based on critical race theory. They're given this opportunity by queer theory to, quote unquote, redeem themselves. And all that they have to give up in the process is they have to radically alienate from their parents and they have to essentially pledge fealty to the Democrat causes because they're told only Democrats care about you if you're trans. Republicans want you to die. Republican policies will actively kill you, et cetera, et cetera. And what happens is the nuclear family is very, very damaged by this assault on children because it's an attempt to sever the parent-child relationship and put in the minds of children a Marxist ideology instead.
One of the things you mentioned in the book, and I have to admit I did not know this, and it was about Joseph Buttigieg, and I had no idea that Peter Buttigieg's father had translated the prison diaries. I absolutely had no idea. And to
isn't
me,
that so wild?
What you said about it that's even more wild is that this guy ran for president and no one even bothered to bring it up.
That's right. That's right. So let me tell you how this came to be. So I wrote this book. I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and I did a lot of the research and writing for this book after I would put her to bed every night. So maybe between like 8 o'clock and 2 o'clock a.m. Mm-hmm. is when I would do a lot of my writing. So I'm researching Antonio Gramsci. And for anybody who has not yet read my book, Antonio Gramsci is the one who introduced cultural Marxism. He kind of he was an Italian Marxist in fascist Italy. The co-founder of the Italian Communist Party, and he recognized that Karl Marx's version of Marxism, the economic Marxism, it wasn't sparking a global Marxist revolution. There weren't a ton of successful Marxist revolutions. But he recognized that when Marxist revolutions were successful, it wasn't based just on the discontent of the working class. It first required the destruction of the cultural institutions on which the working class relied. And Gramsci was the one who named these cultural institutions, among others, the media, the education system, religious institutions, the law, and the family. We see this very clearly happening right now in our country. But Antonio Gramsci's work, in which he identified these cultural institutions, was written in Italian. It wasn't translated into English or American English for years after he wrote. And so I'm sitting late at night reading these prison notebooks, and I didn't even notice on the front cover of this book until I probably picked it up 15 times that the man who translated it from Italian to English was a man named Joseph Buttigieg. And Mark, I got to tell you, when I first saw that, I thought, no, that's just a coincidence. There's no way that that could be connected. But sure enough, Joseph Buttigieg is the father of Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. We might not be facing the cultural assault that we are facing now had it not been for Pete Buttigieg's father.
Wow. And again, you were the one to uncover this and bring it forward. And during the entire time he ran for president, not one enterprising journalist anywhere thought to ask him that question. It's just
so shocking to me. so strong. It seems so elementary that you would ask Pete Buttigieg, do you have any ideological connection in addition to the biological relation to a man who ran an international Gramsci fan club? It's so bananas.
Well, maybe you'll get a chance to ask him one day. Any chance he'll come on your show?
He is always welcome. I would love to have a conversation, a respectful conversation. I know we don't agree on a lot of politics, but I'm happy to sit down with any powerful and prominent person with different views and just discuss their views so that people can see the pros and cons of every side.
I think it's important that we talk without yelling at each other, for sure. Now, in the book, you mention private schools being a solution, homeschooling being a solution. Have a story that might warm your heart. I had someone on a few weeks ago who runs an outfit called Them Before Us that focuses on children who have to go to public school because their parents can't afford to stay home or to send them to private school. And she said her 10-year-old son walked into a classroom. There was a substitute teacher there. It was a man dressed in drag, not just mild drag, but the kind of exaggerated drag that mocks women, with the watermelon-sized chest enhancement and you name it. And her 10-year-old son took one look at the substitute teacher and said, nope, walked straight to the principal's office and said, my mother would not want me to be in that classroom. And he said, I know your mother, and I think you're right. And so he called the mom and said, come pick him up, and he can be off from school today. And what's really weird is this happened just outside of Seattle. So it's encouraging.
Was this in a public school or a private school?
Public.
Wow. I mean, it's so atrocious to think. I mean, good for that little boy having confidence in his parents and his parents instilling right and wrong so that he could recognize it. But what an awful environment that we have to live in right now, where a small child, like 10-year-olds, still don't have all their adult teeth yet.
Right.
Where they have to face this and make that decision themselves to run for that evil. While I'm so proud of him and that family, it actually breaks my heart.
Oh, I understand where you're coming from on that. But it is proof that if you strengthen your kids and prepare your kids, you can stand up to it. And in this case, I have to admit, it was outside of Seattle. I'm surprised the principal didn't call Child Protective Services. But
true.
Bottom line. Now, our time is up, but I'd like you to say anything else about the book you'd like to say that we haven't covered. And I'd like you to tell people how they can get a copy of the book.
Yeah, I'm really excited for people to read this for obvious reasons. I spent the last year and a half of my life working on it. I'm also a little nervous for people to read it because my solutions that I present that contradict much of what the Republican Party has been doing for the last 50 years, they do challenge the prevailing Republican notion on what it means to govern our society. And I know that that's going to be a challenge for some people to hear, to accept, to embrace. A lot of people will, but I really am interested in people's feedback once they read about what we need to be doing to fight back. So you can go to hideyourchildrenbook.com to get your copy of the book. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. You can just walk into a bookstore. You might have to check behind the Hillary Clinton book if they hit it, but it's supposed to be there. Hide Your Children book. And I appreciate everyone who's bought so many. It's been a wild week since this book's been released. And I'm just so overwhelmed with gratitude and encouraged by how many people are interested in how we can actually start winning for once.
Well, it is a very good book. I was able to read it in its entirety before the interview, which I can't always do, but I was able to do it in this case. Very much enjoyed it. It's a real page turner. And like I said, it puts the focus where the focus needs to be. And that's on the Marxists, the puppeteers behind the scene, who are waging this attack on our children, waging this attack on the nuclear family. So once again, Liz, thank you for being here. It was an absolute honor to have you here, and seeing people in your generation doing and saying the kind of things that you are actually gives me a ray of hope that we might just one day pull out of this.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Have a great day, Liz.
You too.
All right. That's it. Thanks for being here.
That was so great. Thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Anytime. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I want to remind you also that Christmas is just around the corner, and Donald Trump silver coins make an excellent stocking stuffer for the MAGA person on your list. Just go to teapartypowerhour.com, click on the Trump coins tab, and there you will see a wonderful selection of 99.9% silver coins that depict many aspects of Donald Trump's political life. Also, I want to remind you, if you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, text T, that's T-E-A, to 44144. That's T, as in taxed enough already, to 44144.